Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. Our Wednesday night live stream has taken a couple of weeks off. We had some events go on. We spent an evening with the Green Party a couple of weeks ago, celebrating a pretty interesting electoral cycle and one that we walked away proud of. If you haven't gotten a chance to take a look at our live stream, please do. We've just been taking some time to reorganize things. Part of that is going to be Diane Moxley's taking over the live stream every Wednesday starting next week. I'll still be a part of it. But Diane, we're going to be excited to see you here every week. Also joining us tonight is Madeline Hoffman from, of course, the Green Party. And what has become a continuing campaign right back into peace activism. Thank you for joining me tonight, comrades.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah. So before we get into it, I want to give a shout out to the Democratic Socialists of America, North Jersey Libertarian Socialist Caucus, which I didn't even know it existed, but I do now. They're throwing a benefit show for the Campfire Aid. It's called the Campfire Mutual Aid Benefit Show for victims of the campfire that obviously devastated a lot of things out there in California. That's going to be held Friday, December 7th at 7 p.m. It ends at 11:30 p.m. It's going to be at the Index Art Center, 237 Washington Street in Newark, New Jersey. It's on our calendar. You can go to www.njrevolutionradio. Go to the revolutionary calendar and you'll see upcoming shows as well as activist events like the one I just plucked. That all being said, let's get into what we're here to talk about tonight. Our comrade Diane Moxley made it out to the International Conference Against U.S. and NATO Military Bases. Diane, welcome home. Welcome home.
Hi, thanks.
Back here following that conference, unfortunately, she had some snow issues and she didn't make it out there, but stayed in touch with the program and followed it here at home. Madeline, what I saw in the news today was horrifying. I'm still kind of recovering from hearing that Donald Trump has authorized use of deadly force, quote, if necessary. And it makes me think about, you know, how we've handled our international affairs for decades now, particularly in South America. This was talked about at the conference. What is the perspective from the international community on this caravan of refugees?
Well, Diane, you might be better able to talk about specifically about the way the conference looked at the refugees themselves, but and what's going on. But from the perspective of someone who's been following this and what's been described by many is that this is a caravan of people seeking political asylum. And many of them are from Honduras, and Honduras was the object of a lot of U.S. intervention over the years, including attempted coups and removal of people from positions of power under the Clinton administration. And so there was a lot of discussion. There's been a lot of discussion about how we can't address this issue without being aware of that history. And of course, this country, our elected officials and our media don't like to acknowledge or look at history very much. So the fact that their arrival in the United States or at the United States border would be enough to and I shouldn't use this word, but I am. It's a pun. It's a bad pun, but enough to trigger an order that would say that people at the border or officials at the border could shoot any one of the people on their way to this country. it's chilling, really, because A, it doesn't solve any problems. B, what I read about it, the rationale was the border police or patrol could shoot if they felt threatened or in danger in any way. And what it reminded me of was all the so-called stand your ground legislation around the country, where police were given the right to shoot should they feel threatened by someone, anyone. And we all know who wins in those cases. It's the police that win. So to me, this is, it just, there's no good rationale for it. It's extremely dangerous, and I think it's going to cause more harm than, I know it's going to cause more harm than good.
Yeah. Diane, was this a part of the program out there in Dublin?
Yeah, well, we had plenaries that were broken down into basically coinciding with the regional command centers of the U.S. military, and then just, you know, talking about what things intersected with NATO actions and NATO military. Yeah, and just, you know, following up on what Madeline was saying, you know, we meddle in Central and South American, you know, countries, and, you know, with our track record and Trump being unhinged, you know, when is it that we're going to be invaded? When are we going to be forced to have regime change? You know, it's just frightening to think of those, you know, where, you know, Trump is just basically unhinged at this point. And, you know, you just don't, you know, we just don't know what we're going to hear next out of his mouth. It's just crazy. And I, you know, wasn't it weeks ago too, where he was acting as if any rocks were thrown, that would be grounds for shooting. So when we're talking about if they feel threatened in any way, I guess perhaps their mere presence could be threatening. And it's
their
just,
mere presence is the threat.
Yeah, just their mere presence. And, you know, it is the refugees' right to come to the border and approach the border. They don't happen to be, from, you know, what I understand, they're not seeking to cross the border in, you know, darkness of night. They want to arrive at the border to apply for asylum, which is exactly how it's done. They apply for asylum at the border, and it is their right under international law to do that. And there is a mechanism in place by our immigration laws. So this is how it's done. This is what is done. Not sure if we have current numbers, but I know the numbers have been dissipating. Mm-hmm. I think this is part of our hysteria and hype that, you know, from the right or from the left, we thrive on hysteria right now. So right now it's coming from the right with this issue. And I don't know, do either of you have current numbers on the caravan at this time? Because I think it has significantly dissipated, correct?
I hear anywhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 to 10,000, as I
understand. Really? I had only heard 1,000, so.
Yeah, I thought
it. As reported on NPR, they've taken up some refuge in Tijuana. Mexico has opened up a stadium and some other facilities to try and, but they're having issues there where the locals are now protesting, you know, Mexico only. So they're having issues, you know, trying to take on refugees on the other side of the border already. So it's a catastrophe, but it's certainly the result of our foreign policy, which seems to only be getting worse under Trump. Not giving any credit to these previous administrations who've made a mess of things just the same. You know, but, you know, you have these continued support of right-wing fascist dictators in South America. He's made positive statements about the new president of Brazil, the incoming president of Brazil, who is said that, you know, he will jail and his political opposition and exterminate indigenous people.
And destroy the rainforest. And
right, but the quotes coming out of the Trump administration, and I think it wasn't Trump himself, but said something like, they're celebrating the return of free markets to Brazil.
So that's the one thing, it's consistent too with what Trump is saying about Saudi Arabia and the money flowing into this country from arms sales and the like. I just wanted to add one thing very quickly about the Central and South America panel, because I listened to it all via live stream. People were pointing to Venezuela as the next real hot spot to watch. We have been following it and watching it for 14 years, from when Hugo Chavez first was elected, and then subsequent, attempted coups and failed coups and so on down the line. And we just need to, I don't have anything specific to say except that, sign to look for, but I know that there was concern that Venezuela could explode into the next full-scale military operation. And it's all consistent with, and Colombia would be a friend, would be an ally, and with things that are going on in Colombia today with extrajudicial killings of labor and social and community leaders. We really do continue to make a mess down there.
Unfortunately, we don't seem to stop screwing around on any continent. Imperialism at any point doesn't retract. It's constantly trying to expand. And at a certain point, the empire collapses. So I wonder how much longer we can sustain this. And of course, we have to talk about what's going on in the Middle East and in Africa. Now, something I guess that's new on the political radar, while it's been unfortunate that we've had to talk about Palestine for so long, it's been in the news for a very long time. But AFRICOM is something that, Madeline, you taught me about years ago, but is just starting to make it into the narrative now. Diane, did we talk about this in Dublin?
Yes, we did. I just want to touch on before I just give you guys some information about what was discussed in regards to the AFRICOM, which stands for the African Continent Command Center of the U.S. Foreign Military Base Structure. One thing I want to make mention of, and we had a few people present from Black Alliance for Peace. So if everybody could go to the Black Alliance for Peace website, there is a petition on shutting down AFRICOM, U.S. out of Africa campaign. So you can get a whole lot of information about that. And we just have to take a strong stance on that. And I know we all feel the same way about the other command centers, but this is a newer explosion of foreign military bases. I believe it was in about 2008, 2009 that the plan was created and then set into motion. And when we had the 2011 brutal regime change in Libya, it was to take out Gaddafi because he was a threat to our ability to blanket the continent of Africa with our foreign bases, because he was actually on the path towards trying to seek unity in Africa. And some people believe, and it's very, very likely that, because, we our U.S. government and military, we try to have you believe that this is about national security. But in Africa, it is so blatantly obvious that it is about the exploitation and control of the natural resources. There's oil, that has to be controlled by our government and then the multinational corporations that seek to profit from it. There are mining for materials. A lot of it goes to the electronics. I believe it's something called Coltan in the Congo. And there are other minerals that are, you know, it's about assisting multinational corporations control resources. And then there's also the other issue of us competing with China. China has been involved in Africa, but they do it for more of a financial pressure by assisting with infrastructure from highways and other transportation infrastructure. And that's a way, though, that is also going to create stress and tension, because then, you know, you're wrapping up countries in lots of loans and debt to China, just as, you know we've got our China loan debt problem. Well, China's going to be doing that with different African nations to have power and influence, because we're all competing over these resources. And just like we know throughout the world, it has nothing to do with national security whatsoever.
Centuries of colonialism in Africa by all manner of countries, including the United States and Portugal and all of Europe. It's no secret that Muammar Gaddafi was an outspoken voice in trying to build African unity and black solidarity on the African continent. And, you know, the world just can't seem to give them the right of self-determination. And I've never, you know, it's very frustrating for peace activists that we're continuing to advance this colonial and imperialist mindset on a continent, quite frankly, that the world needs to just stay the hell out of and allow them to have some self-determination. Madeline, well, I know you're waiting to chime in there.
Please. Yeah, no, I just want to underscore the issue of regime change. Because Libya was kind of I'm not going to say it was the first one, but in the last 10 years or so, it was the first one. And then there was Iraq, and then, you know, there's still talk about Iran, you know, and changing.
Kim Jong-un. North Korean leaders, leaders, they've talked about removing all.
And Syria, you know, for all of the other issues that swirl around Syria, the basic issue, at least in my estimation and some others, is, again, this issue of regime change. And regime change is illegal under international law. It's immoral. It's unjust. It's all of the things you just said, Brian. So, and I think, Diane, it's what? All but one African country has a U.S. military base in it. And as you said, prior to 2008, there were none. So this is right. Done rapidly, and the local people do not see it. The only way they can see it is as aggression. It's not defense, it's aggression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Diane, we need to talk a little bit about your personal experience out to Dublin. This is not something you do every day. I know you know it was something you're looking forward to for a while. Now that you're back and you're jet lagged somewhat, I'm sure. But overall, what do you feel? What's your emotional state right now? Are you just too exhausted to think about it, or are you? Where are you at?
I am a little jet lagged because I was in Dublin for a bit, and then we'll touch on I was in The Hague and in the Netherlands. So I adjusted to their time zone. So it's about, you know, after 2 a.m. for me right now. But and I think what also happens when you go to these conferences is there is information overload, because it's so hard to cram so much in 3 days, but it is so useful and so necessary. And it's not even just about the information learned and the resources you're able to get, which are just so valuable. And I'm pretty sure they still have the live streams up. If you go to the No U.S. Foreign Bases website, mm-hmm. you should be able to find the live streams. So they're broken down into plenaries. So I'd highly recommend our viewers check them out. It's such very valuable information from, you know, just wonderful presenters.
We'll post some links for you guys to find it, so keep an eye on yourself out there.
I'm sorry?
I said we'll post the links on our Facebook page and whatnot, so keep an eye on our stuff out there. We'll get it out there.
Excellent. And, you know, besides taking in all of this information, the other wonderful thing about being there is the ability to meet so many wonderful allies. And I think they said there was at least 35 countries represented, about 200 people there. Mm. And, you know, in these really, really difficult times where, it's just frightening, like what we were talking about with the Honduran refugees coming and just the ugly, ugly news that is just sickening to all of us mm-hmm. day in and day out. One of the things that I love about going to these conferences is just meeting so many wonderful allies and in this context from, you know, across the world. And, you know, sometimes when I do travel, like last year when I was in Palestine and here being in Dublin and the Netherlands, sometimes when I'm here in a political context, I tend to walk around apologizing to everyone for my country's sins and atrocities.
It's usually not mentioned in a positive way, is it, Diane?
Yeah, but it was so nice to see that our foreign allies are actually very sympathetic towards Americans, but of course they have issues with the American government, which, as we all know, because we've been doing this work for a while, it's not just the Trump administration, it's just that Trump ugly disgust to the surface for us all to see, but we know the problems with U.S. imperialism and hyper-militarism have been around under the Democratic administrations of Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. So this is just an uglier version of something that's been around for decades now. They have serious issues. Our foreign allies have serious issues with the American government. But I really got the vibe that, you know, they told me too, you know, in our getting to network and connect, they believe the American people are good. We're just sort of, you know, held hostage by our corporate controlled duopoly. So we've got some work to do. They can't stand our corporate controlled media. But at the same time, I thought this was interesting. I hadn't heard this before. That they, many people that I spoke to think that we have some of the best sources of indie media that they rely on. Mm. So that was some good insights and
they
information.
Start listening here to New Jersey Revolution Radio.
Anytime. Better be.
We welcome foreign comrades.
Absolutely.
As far away as Pennsylvania.
We have large reach. Yes.
I am moving to a more humor-based platform pretty soon. So this conference, obviously, I think that it will inform you in the weeks and months to come, you know, as you move forward in the peace movement. And after this, you went to The Hague for part two of your journey.
Yes.
For those that haven't followed, for those that keep up with our posts and everything, you'll know why and what Diane did there. But for those that may not have that information yet, Diane, tell us about that part of your journey.
Sure. On Monday, I was part of a delegation from the Green Party of the United States. We had our Peace Action Committee present. I'm part of the International Committee of GPUS. And we had a letter to deliver to the International Criminal Court, which is located in The Hague. And this letter, which we could also post links to the text of the letter, but it was a request for a full investigation to be conducted. In 2015, the prosecutor of the International Committee, International Criminal Court, began what's called a preliminary inquiry into the actions that have been taken since 2015 by the Israeli government against Palestinians, with a focus on Gaza, but also on the Israeli settlements in the West Bank and any bad acts that were also happening in the West Bank as well. So, you know, a little bit of history there. They can't go back farther than 2015 because this actually is an issue of international law and the International Criminal Court that the UN General Assembly voted to recognize Palestine as a state in, I believe it was 2012.
Okay.
But I believe it was 2014 or early 2015 that the Palestine government was brought into the International Criminal Court so that they are allowed to participate. And it is the prosecutor that then has to file a case. So we can't, or another state can't file a case because it is just as criminal courts work that you have a prosecutor. So this letter was about asking the prosecutor to do more of a full investigation at this time. And, you know, as we've all seen since the beginning of the Great March of Return in April of this year, there's been a little bit more in the U.S., a little bit more outrage. And what we're asking for is we need something more than just statements of outrage.
Yeah.
We need some type of action. You know, we've talked about it in the context of the U.S. We have, you know, some politicians did make, you know, like I said, statements of outrage against what the Israeli government was doing. But if nothing ever has teeth, it's just going to continue. And even this past Monday, there was a AP press member of the press who was shot.
Yes.
I believe he was a photojournalist, so he was shot taking photographs of the protests below. And from what I read, he was a significant distance away from the protesters and up on a hill getting a good angle of shots of the peaceful protests. And, you know, it sounds like his lower leg was you know, somewhat destroyed.
Crazy.
Yeah, I saw photos. I saw a video, a footage of it. That's what. That's where he was. That's where he was shot. Yes.
Yeah.
I think
so
it was Kevin.
I
think it was Kevin Zeiss that said, "You know, we need to hold powerful countries accountable too."
And yes.
It seems like powerful countries, and you know, I'll say this about a number of countries, including especially this one, but you know, Russia and China, and you know, various European nations that hold large power. Don't get charged with war crimes. They don't. George Bush is running around. He should be in jail. Yep. Dick Cheney's running around. He's enjoying his money and his second heart, you know, and you know, and they should be in jail. I mean, you know, I remember when liberals started praising George Bush.
Oh, God.
So right. bad. And I made a post on Facebook that I wouldn't look. George Bush deserves to be in the septic tank of a gulag. All right. Yep. Let's not lionize this guy. For what they did, but that's what
Brian. Yes, I'm sorry. When Diane, there was a story too that broke today, and I've started to do some follow up on it about how many extrajudicial targeted killings have been conducted by Israel and the Mossad. Instead of there was an argument between Netanyahu and the director of Mossad at one point about whether they should do more targeted killings or whether there needed to be an invasion of Iran. And I think Israel is the country that has had the most such targeted killings of any country since World War II. And these are, you know, illegal, immoral, and unethical, all of the above. Mm-hmm. And they continue. So it's a book called Rise and Kill, I think,
yeah.
Which is, I just started to read the intro. It's chilling. It's
the,
chilling.
The premise, I know the book, he did an interview on NPR stated that, you know, the essentially that government has a culture of assassination because these assassins are revered and then put into political office and positions of power. So it's the culture of that government is one that is, it celebrates assassination, and it should be, I don't know, if we start calling it state-sanctioned murder, does it help raise awareness? Maybe we need to start coming up with better ways of describing what it is, because it's, you're right, it is immoral and it is unjust, but I think there's large segments of, unfortunately, the populations of imperialist countries, like us, like colonialist countries, like Israel, to gloss over murder with, military terms and disguise.
And before I forget, because I had meant to say it and I forgot, our recent history here in the last 15 years, President Obama is the president who's ordered the most targeted, quote unquote, targeted killings in the United States, more even than Bush before him. So, yeah, these are tactics of war. You're right, Brian, and they need to be highlighted.
Yeah,
they're not even tactics of war, like you said. These are outlawed actions. This is murder. This is murder. This isn't war. This isn't defense. This isn't combating terrorism. This isn't keeping us safe. This is murdering your political enemies. And just because we're in a different country doesn't make it any better. It wouldn't be any better than if, you know, somebody here murdered somebody to get a political office. We're just murdering other officials from other governments because we don't like them. And that's not even war. That goes...
That's true.
It goes into horrible, scary territory. And we've normalized it. We've normalized it. And I think part of the way we normalize it is through terminology and use of media.
Yeah. So using more harsh words might jar people, but I don't know. I don't know lately. It's we are in very scary times.
It was good of me to hear you talk about some people impressed with some American independent media.
Yeah.
And like I said, you know, I hope that you know, they look take a look and share this with some of your new comrades, and if they're listening to this,
yes,
if you share it with them, we appreciate all the efforts made for this conference over in Dublin and all their efforts around the world to bring peace. We understand that we need to do our part here in America, but I think it's really wonderful to hear that people are doing their part around the world, and we'll continue to build this movement both locally here in our communities and around the world, because that's the only way we're going to start to take on these very large challenges and change things for the better. Madeline, before we go, I do want to give you a chance to let us know what's going on. As I stated earlier, the campaign just kept rolling, right? I mean, we didn't stop anything. And I know that everybody who lost their election in the establishment is taking a break, but you certainly did not.
No.
Have you got anything coming up that needs support? How can our listeners listen to that?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. And I mean, I wish there was an office to run for right now, because there's no platform like that platform to highlight these issues. But there was a letter, or there was, I'm sorry, there's a piece of legislation introduced by Senator Menendez, who, as you know, I was running against, and a few other senators that is talking about a suspension of arms sales to Saudi Arabia, you know, because of what's going on in Yemen. And we've seen one image after another of Yemeni children who are dying, some 85,000 already, and perhaps thousands more, whom even if humanitarian intervention were conducted today, would still not be able to survive because the malnutrition has proceeded so far. But so I was reading this, legislation, about this legislation, and thinking, okay, so all of the pressure and the campaigning and everything else resulted in some action here by our senator in New Jersey. And then I kept reading further. He says he wants to suspend arms sales to Saudi Arabia, but will not take action to suspend arms sales to Bahrain, which is part of the Saudi-led coalition against Yemen. Mm. So what kind of games are we playing here? You know, that Saudi Arabia's in the news, so all right, we'll, and even this, Senator Mitch McConnell has to allow it to be voted on, and it may not, but not be voted on. But even this, we have to look underneath it to see whether the games that the military-industrial complex are playing in this, because selling the weapons to Bahrain instead of Saudi Arabia, if it ever got to that, would really not change the conditions on the ground very much at all. So that's one, is to, and then to add into what Diane's talking about, we really need to put pressure on both our senators in regard to Palestine and Gaza and Palestine, and the legislation that would make it criminal to speak out in favor of boycott, divest, and sanction, because both senators support that. And as there's a call by the Green Party and others for accountability in what with what's been going on, I think the vise will be turned tighter around, you know, speaking out against what Israel is doing. So we need to put pressure on both Menendez and Booker, both in regards to Yemen and Bahrain, and then also Palestine and Gaza.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for all your work, Madeline. We appreciate it. And Diane,
it's the only thing we can do, right? We got to keep doing it.
We have to keep it up. And Diane, once you get a good night's rest and you restore yourself back to New Jersey time, we're going to get to work on a new Wednesday night live stream featuring you, which I'm excited about. And just for people that know out there, I'm not going anywhere. I'm sure I'll be popping in from time to time at various places around New Jersey Revolution Radio. But, you know, as an organizer, sometimes all I do is just get stuff off the ground and then hand it off to somebody who can take it to another level, and it gets bigger and better. And so I'm excited about handing it off. I'm still going to be doing WTF with Pat Noble. We're still going to we're going to be doing more live shows. So there's a lot more behind the scenes work, and it's a sign of growth. So I'm excited to step out and let you step in. What's your vision right now? I know it's early. We're going to do some planning during the week, but what do you plan on bringing to our audience on Wednesday nights going forward?
Oh, well, you know, just all the work that we've been doing, you know, like, I even just want to touch on right now that, you know, tomorrow is Indigenous Peoples Day. So this is about decolonizing. You know, we've got to have new sources that, as we're talking about, you know, we've got to get our word out. We've got to get real indie media, because we've got our ridiculously corporate controlled media, and even with social media, it's hard out there. So our job, and I know you're still going to be out there doing stuff, and Madeline, elections are done, but our work of organizing and activism and educating ourselves and others, we're just starting. So my show will be about all the good work that we do and will be doing. It's a messy, messy, ugly world out there. So we've got a difficult road ahead of us, but I'm not giving up. The campaign is done, but next chapter goes on, and it'll be a snapshot of what we do every day in the life of activist, organizer, and politician, right?
That's it.
Right.
Yeah,
I
just wanted to touch on, because I did want to talk about, I know we're wrapping up, but I wanted to just remind everybody, it is Indigenous Peoples Month. Tomorrow is Indigenous Peoples Day. So even if you are having a certain meal tomorrow, I'd ask you all to try to, at some point during your day and perhaps during your meal of a day, which I will not name, shift your typical narratives and talk about the struggles in Indigenous communities today. We all have Indigenous communities local to us because we are on stolen land. So maybe do a little research before your family meal and talk about what's going on local and how you can help and raise awareness. I just wanted to touch on that. Being here on the eve of that certain day that shall be nameless.
It is a good idea. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Madeline.
Yeah, I just want to add, because I won't be doing it tomorrow, but Friday and Saturday, or at least Friday, I will be participating in an international fast in solidarity with the people of Yemen. The holiday that shall not be named. There is a number of
Indigenous
us.
Indigenous Peoples Day, I call it Indigenous.
Yeah, true enough. Yep. Yeah, so people are fasting starting tomorrow, along with Cindy Sheehan, who had organized the Women's March on the Pentagon. Good. People are fasting. So that's another option for people in addition to the thinking about and speaking about the Indigenous people and local concerns that are happening.
All right. Yeah. Thank you very much. We do have to wrap it up. Everybody, as I stated before, if you go to the website, there is the Revolutionary Calendar. Sign up. Let us know about your event. It lets us know what's going on, give you a chance to come on and promote it, stick it on our calendar. And the Democratic Socialists of America Libertarian Socialist Caucus did so. They're going to be throwing the Campfire Mutual Aid Benefit Show Friday, December 7th at 7 p.m. That's going to happen at the Index Arts Center, 237 Washington Street, Newark, New Jersey. So get in touch with them. They're on Facebook. There's a Facebook event, but if you can't find them, you can message us through the website as well. Please, if you get a chance to make a little donation, we could use it. We're doing okay, but as we grow, we do need more resources, and I constantly see stories out there that I would just love to cover, but we just can't because we're just not that big yet. But your contributions are starting to add up. We've been adding equipment. We've been adding graphic design. We've been bringing on new people, and all of that is thanks to your small contributions. We don't take corporate money. We don't have large grants coming in. It's five, it's 10, it's 20 bucks at a time. It's buy a mug. It's these little things, and they're adding up, and that's what's helping us pay the bills. So thank you. If you have supported us, please continue to going into this holiday season. And we will be back next week, 8 p.m. Wednesday night, for Diane Noxley live on New Jersey Revolution Radio. Thanks a lot for tuning in, comrades, and have a great night.